This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody, on this gorgeous Saturday. Hope everybody's going to be enjoying this weather and, of course, a chance to catch up on so many different things here on this gorgeous, gorgeous day. We'll be here for the full 3 hours. Mariners last night getting rained out, so they'll have doubleheader action starting right after the show. Let's waste no time. Of course, you can give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with some headlines. Well, of course, as we mentioned, the Mariners get postponed with rain. I mean, they waited so long, over 3 hours, to see if there was a chance to get the game in, and there was no chance whatsoever. So they'll have a doubleheader today starting at 1 o'clock against Detroit. Marco Gonzalez continues to be the starter. Manny Acta is going to be managing the team because Scott Servais is attending the graduation of his daughter. And so because of that, he has a chance to get away. And if anything does happen, let's say Manny Acta gets kicked out, Ichiro is going to be the manager because he is the bench coach for this game. As far as other news, looks like, certainly the performance last week of Alex Magoo really impressed them enough that they released Stephen Morris. And so I guess you could say a promotion was there for the seventh-round choice from Florida International. He is now the third-string quarterback. Anybody thinking that the Mariners had a chance to bring in Cason Williams? Well, forget about that. The Indianapolis Colts signed him to a contract yesterday. There are 23 teams that are having their rookie mini camps this week. There were 9 last week. Lots of draft choices signing. By my count, 144. Alex Kappa just got done with Tampa Bay. 44 of the 256 have already reached deals, which is just really impressive. As far as in the NBA, no games last night. Series is all going to start on Saturday, on Sunday and Monday. Cleveland, of course, going up against Boston starting on Sunday. Golden State going up against Houston on Monday. Dwayne Casey, 59 wins this year. The only coach that ever brought the Raptors to 50-plus wins, and he's done it 3 times. He gets fired yesterday, and it happens the day after he was unanimously voted as the NBA Coach of the Year. Unbelievable. But of course, I think it's not unbelievable because everybody thought that was going to happen once they lost to the Cavaliers, because that's the one problem that Dwayne Casey has, not being able to beat the Cavs. Hey, a lot of teams have experienced that, not being able to beat a great player like LeBron James. So Dwayne Casey out of work, and those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. How are we doing on a sunny Saturday morning, my friend?
Very well. How about you?
Oh, doing great, man. First things first, happy Mother's Day to all the lovely mothers out there.
Thank you. Good job by you.
Hey, you were talking about some landing spots. What's going on with Dez Bryant, Mr. Clayton? I mean, I know he's lost a step. You can see some things. He's not as athletic as he is. But I think if he would go to a team with a veteran quarterback and maybe a number one receiver where that would take coverages off of him, then he could possibly give you a little more production. What do you think?
No, there's no question. I mean, he's certainly one of the better wide receivers on the street, but I think what it still comes down to is what's it going to cost? I think that there was the thought that he was going to be asking, I think, Baltimore for 3 years, $24 million, which is a fair price. I mean, if he's a number two receiver, that's right in the ballpark. But, I think he wants a one-year deal. I think Baltimore was willing to go multi-year, and so without that commitment, he didn't get Baltimore. They went a different direction, and then you can see that other teams, I think, are a little gun-shy right now, not knowing if they want to add to it. I mean, he'll get signed sometime, but there's really hardly any activity involving Dez Bryant.
Yeah, it just shocks me that he turned down. I think he turned down a nice little deal that came from the Baltimore Ravens,
yeah.
Like you just said. Why is that? He's so bent on wanting to stay in the NFC East.
No, I think it's a matter that I think he probably wants a one-year deal because he wants to have a chance to go prove himself again and then go get the big money. I mean, when he's making $14.5 million, you still are a confident guy. You still think you can come back and maybe recapture that. And so probably a one-year deal. But if you're going to be Baltimore, you want to try to protect yourself and maybe get the multi-year deal. So in the end, it didn't happen. And in the end, he has to just kind of sit and wait.
If you look at the free agency list out there, Mr. Clayton, there's still a lot of good players that are still out there right now. Let's take, for instance, with the Saints right now. I know they say they're not going to bring in a running back, with Mark Ingram's four-game suspension.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really want to see them try to put Alvin Kamara in a situation where he has to carry that ball at least 15, 20 touches a game running the ball between the tackles.
Right.
I don't think that's good for him, you know, because he's not a big guy, and you don't want to beat him up too bad in a four-game stretch without Mark Ingram there.
Mm-hmm.
If you were the Saints, would you go after a running back right now?
I think I'd wait. I think I'd kind of get, just kind of get the guys going as far as the mini camp and just kind of seeing who looks good and all that. And then if you need one, you pick one up right before the start of training camp.
Yeah.
I think that might be the better tact.
Yeah. I know they're having the rookie OTAs or the rookie mini camps right mm-hmm. now as far as that's concerned. You know, and I'm just, you know, looking at the way that they're just, the Saints are put up and projected to be like, you know, with all the wide receivers they brought in, I still think they should. Would you bring Adrian Peterson back?
Is Adrian Peterson still available? Yeah.
Would you bring him back?
No. Absolutely not.
You wouldn't kill that experiment?
No, it's not a fit. It wasn't a fit. I mean, it was a bad signing when they signed him. I mean, because remember, I mean, he's an I formation running back that mm-hmm. likes to line up 8 yards behind the line of scrimmage and not play out of shotgun. Well, guess what? I mean, Drew Brees plays out of shotgun.
Definitely does. He definitely does. What about the running back that used to play with the Dallas Cowboys from the Redskins? He's out there. He's a free agent right now.
Yeah, Alfred Morris. You know, he's available, and
yeah.
They could go for DeMarco Murray. That could be a possibility.
Yeah. Now, DeMarco Murray might be looking for a lucrative deal, I think.
Well, not at this stage.
He might be looking for a situation where he could play for all 16 games, because once he knows that Ingram is going to be off his four-game suspension, his touches might be relocated, might be lessened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can see that he's not going to come to a team that, at some point you got to go find a job.
True.
It's nice able to pick and choose, but, I mean, he hasn't had hardly any activity.
I know. I still think he's a productive running back.
I do, too.
I don't think he's a guy that you know, people look at him and try to say that he's lost. I think DeMarco Murray, I watched him last year with the Titans before his injuries. I thought he was doing fantastic.
I did, too.
The Tennessee Titans.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, somebody's missing, and you're right. There are good players out there. It's just that he got caught up in the best running back draft in more than a decade, and so there wasn't a lot of opportunities, and there aren't a lot of opportunities now. I guess you could say maybe New Orleans is an opportunity, but hey, Sean Payton doesn't want to bring in a veteran running back.
I know. I'm gonna throw caution. I think he might have to change his mind once he gets around to the start of the season, because I just don't want to see him take Alvin Kamara and try to get him 15, 20 touches in that backfield.
Right.
And have him running between the tackles. You can take away from him like that. You can take a lot away from him. You know, Mark Ingram spelled him a lot with all that between the tackles running. You know, I'm hoping that he maybe has another plan in mind. We'll just have to wait and see on that situation. You might have another plan. How do you look at the Dallas Cowboys coming up into the new year, Mr. Clayton?
Mm,
you know, I look at them.
I have Dallas some reservations.
Ryan, you lose Jason Witten.
Right.
You lose about 60% of your end zone ratio as far as touchdowns are concerned, as far as passing touchdowns. Did they replenish that, you think?
I think they've done a different job, but they really don't have a true number one wide receiver. Allen Hurns is their best receiver. I mean, I know that they still have Cole Beasley, who can't separate from from cornerbacks, and I question whether Terrence Williams is going to be able to make the team. I thought they got more speed. I mean, I don't know how good Deontay Thomas. Remember, they signed him for $2.5 million. You know, there's speed with Tavon Austin. You know, so they've kind of moved it around. I think they addressed speed needs, but they really need a number one wide receiver. Just not going to have it this year, and they're not going to have a number one tight end. I don't even know if they're going to have a number two tight end. I mean, you think about it, their top two tight ends, James Hanna and Jason Witten, have both retired.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. You know, right now, if you look at their tight end position, it's kind of, you know, you predicated on the rookie from Stanford to come in and give you some high production. I mean, I guess that's what they're thinking. But I'm just looking at it. I mean, it's going to be Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, if you can man up on those receivers, and I mean, I'll put seven in the box and take my chances.
Oh, no question. You know, you mean you put eight in the box and just take the chances on the outside? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I just was sitting back looking at them and see what they did. I don't think they improved themselves.
No, I don't think so either. And they have not been as aggressive this offseason in adding players, and I think that's a problem. And then they find out Malik Collins, their defensive tackle, needed a third surgery for a metatarsal injury, and he's going to be out 3 months.
And they also lost. They just lost McClain to the Falcons.
Right.
In free agency, yeah.
Well, and I mean, you look at what they did, and you know, this is now the third year for Dak Prescott. Well, you see what every team is doing that has a young quarterback that's good. I mean, did they really add enough? I mean, what? They added Allen Hurns, Deontay Thompson. They get a fullback in Jazeem Owale, a backup linebacker in Joe Thomas, Coney Ealy. I mean, they didn't add anything. Tavon Austin, draft choices. I mean, that's just, you know, they did not take advantage. If you're going to have a young quarterback, just like Seattle did with Russell Wilson, I mean, the year two, year three, you're going out and you're getting players. And they didn't do it. I mean, that's what Philadelphia did. That's what the Rams did. You try to get high-priced players. They didn't do it.
No, were they that tight against the cap? I think they were, right?
No, they were, but that's just bad cap management more than anything else.
Yeah, there's poor cap management. A lot of those contracts they give, they'll come into fruition on them. Mm-hmm. That's really hurting them right now. But, you know, like you say, with a young quarterback, they should have had made that opportunity to put good players around him so they could make this happen. And on the defensive side, I like they drafted the young linebacker, but I still think they could have did a lot more for that defense as far as concerned. I still... There's something missing there, Mr. Clayton.
Oh, I agree.
There's something missing there on that side of the ball. What do you think about the Redskins in that division? Since we're in the East?
I think they're about a 500 team, maybe a team that can win 9. They're not great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that's an upgrade going to Alex Smith over Kirk Cousins?
Not really. No, I think it's pretty even because what I like about Cousins is that he kind of fit that mode that Jay Gruden had with Andy Dalton when he was in Cincinnati, a little bit more of a gunslinger type. I mean, you know, you don't have a great strong arm, although it was funny. Last year, Alex Smith had more long passes downfield than just about anybody else in the league.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that equates between Minnesota and Washington, with Minnesota taking Kirk Cousins and Washington picking up Alex Smith. I'm really intrigued to see how both. I think Kirk Cousins might have went to the better opportunity as far as concerned with the Minnesota Vikings.
Oh, agreed, because they got a better defense. No question. Hey, JB, got to run.
Mr. Clayton, have a good one, my friend. We'll talk next Saturday.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
Load up those phone lines at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Brad in Cedro Woolley. Hey, Brad.
Hey, John. Hey, I really appreciate your logical insight on the NFL, which isn't always logical. But I do want your opinion on something.
Yeah.
I've heard all these analysts talking about how terrible Seattle was, how Snyder and Carroll, they really goofed by not protecting their multimillion-dollar quarterback. And what I don't get is that you put a good running game in, and that is the protection. It unbalances the defense to where they have to take all things into consideration rather than just teeing off on the quarterback. So, you know, why is it that all these analysts are talking about how ridiculous Seattle was for not protecting Russell?
Yeah, they tried, and it's what I get irritated about, because everybody says, well, they didn't make a commitment. I mean, they go back a couple years ago when they were one of the youngest offensive lines in the league, and they said, well, they put no money into the offensive line. Well, you know, some of the stuff didn't work out, so they had to start making some moves, and they take a second-round pick and Ethan Posick, a trade for a second-round pick with Dwayne Brown. They had a second-round pick. I mean, it's like, you know, they have two second-round picks, a first-round pick, a third-round pick. I mean, they've made commitments. Unfortunately, as a lot of teams are finding out, you can put commitments in, but they may not necessarily work out. And if that's going to – it takes some time to be able to build up an offensive line. And, you know, it's not like you can go out in free agency and – think that you're going to get great product. I mean, you have to pay so much, and they can't pay $14, $13 million for a guard. That wasn't going to happen. And so, no, I think that things kind of went awry. Pete Carroll then recognized it, makes changes in the coaching staff. They now come in with a very good coach in Mike Solari. He'll make it a more physical offensive line. Brian Schottenheimer's the one voice on offense, and he's going to run the football. And so I think that will fix things up, and I think the line is better. I think that if they win the first and second downs, then they have a chance to get better on offense.
Yeah. Well, it just frustrates me. Everybody seems to take Seattle as the doormat and harangues everything that they do, and their success says that they've been doing it right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's mistakes. There's things that go awry, but they've still done a good job.
Exactly. No, it's like, and you say what you want. It's like, as disappointing as last season was, they still won 9 games and were close enough to maybe win 3 others, and should have probably won 3 others, but they didn't.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, now it's a matter that they are reloading. The team is not as talented as it was last year, but it's not a bad team.
What do you think of Penny?
I love him. I think he's going to be really good. Liked everything I saw of him. He's smooth running. He's great pass catching. He's smooth running after the catch. I think you can see he's going to be physical. He's got a very good perspective on the game. I think that he's going to be good.
I do. I think he's going to be Lynch incarnate. I think, you know, he might even have better hands than Lynch has.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll see.
But no, I think Penny's going to be really good. I think
they
came out great on that one.
Yeah, I do too. I think they did. I'd give them an A on the whole draft, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're never going to get good grades in the draft because they take players that may not fit other systems, but it fits their system. I mean, you look and you see, okay, Trey Flowers, he's 6'3", and he's got long 34-inch arms, and he looks the part at cornerback. Now, we saw this, Therold Simon didn't work out, but it worked out with Richard Sherman. So, you know, you make some moves, and it fits what they want. And, hey, if it doesn't match up with the grades of anybody else, they don't care.
Well, that's it. I mean, hey, for the Kansas City Chiefs, this might have been an F draft.
Mm-hmm.
But for the Seattle Seahawks, it was a top-notch draft. They got what they wanted.
Exactly.
So, well, thanks.
All right, hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Robert in Seattle. Hey, Robert.
Hey, how's it going, John?
Good, how are you?
I have a quick question for you. I'm good. I'm getting ready for Mother's Day tomorrow, of course, and to get ready, I have to ask you this question.
Yeah.
Could you rank and order these four defenses? The 1976 Steelers, the 1985 Bears, the 2000 Ravens, and the 2013 Seahawks, please.
Yeah, and number one, I've never seen a defense like the 76 Steelers. I mean, that team was just incredible. It was one where I watched them, and they defied you to even get a first down. I mean, they weren't going to allow you to score. And look at the shutouts. What do they have, 5 shutouts down the stretch? I mean, that was – and a good part of the season, they had Mike Krusik at quarterback. So that defense was the best I've seen. I think you probably have to put in order probably the Bears number 2, the Ravens number 3, and then, you know, the Seahawks would be number 4. And I think, you know, you still have to kind of mix in maybe the Purple People Eaters, maybe a couple of the – one of the Ram teams. You know, but historically, I think this is a good team. And then you might even have to consider right after Seattle, the Denver Broncos of a couple years ago.
John, are you saying that because you are a Pittsburgh Steelers fan? Because I'm entering the Bears as my number one.
No, I'm not saying it because of that, because I'm not a fan.
I thought you were a Steelers fan growing up.
No, I'm not a Steelers fan. I covered them when I was in high school, but I'm not a Steelers fan. What I am is, you know, I try to be as objective on this, but all you have to look and you see, because again,
that's why I called you are the most effective resource, I think, in the NFL, and I totally appreciate your expertise.
See, because what you have to appreciate, again, it's like, it's always going to be up for debate. There's no question about it. But that 76 team defied you. I mean, you know, the Bears were phenomenal. That's why, you know, they have the second
Bears
rating.
Shut out 2 consecutive opponents in the NFC playoff game.
What was that again?
The Bears were shut out both of their playoff opponents in 85, the Rams and the Giants. They then only allowed New England to get the 10 points, which were almost accidental in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that I thought they were phenomenal. But, John, I have another question for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, go ahead.
What do you get your mother's on the last day before Mother's Day? How do you handle that?
Get her a nice little dinner, too. I mean, you know, take care of her, obviously, for brunch or dinner and all that stuff. And maybe, you know, cook her something or make it easy for her on the eve.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up, we talked to Josh Weinfuss from the Arizona Cardinals on ESPN.com, seeing what the Cardinals look like in their rookie minicamp, how it looks for Josh Rosen. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Joining us from ESPN.com, it's Josh Weinfuss, covers the Arizona Cardinals. And so I guess the big question is, day one, how did Josh Rosen look?
You know, he started out pretty rusty. You can definitely tell it's been a while since he's played some football. But, you know, it took him about, I would say, maybe a half hour into the, it was like 2.5 hour practice for him to kind of settle down. And then he looked really good. He really did. You know, he had a lot of zip on his balls. The one thing I did notice that pretty consistently, his balls were tailing downward at the receiver. But for the most part, I thought he looked good. He made a couple nice long throws, especially one to second round pick Christian Kirk out of Texas A&M that you can tell drew the attention of a lot of people on the field. But overall, you know, he looked athletic. He looked calm out there. And overall, I think it was a good day for Josh Rosen.
No, interesting. So now you look and you see that they pretty much had a draft that was almost all offense and, you know, second round wide receiver. And how did he look?
Christian Kirk, he good. I mean, his hand, I was so impressed by his hands. I'll be honest, I didn't watch a ton of him in college. But watching him on the field yesterday, you can tell that there's something there. Obviously, he's a smaller receiver, so that'll take some adjusting, I think, to the NFL, you know, the size of the cornerbacks and the safeties and whatnot. But overall, you know, I was impressed with his hands. He caught every pass that I saw thrown to him, I saw him catch. So that doesn't mean he caught everything, but everything that I saw, he caught. But I think he could. I think he's going to have a good role in this offense because this receiving corps still needs some work. And obviously you have Larry Fitzgerald as your number one. But I think Kirk could be, he can compete for that number two, number three spot, depending on kind of what kind of scheme Mike McCoy wants to run. But I was also impressed by him.
Yeah. How's that whole receiving core look right now? Because obviously it's undergone change.
There's a lot of question marks with it because you have, like I said, you have Larry Fitzgerald as your number one. I think your number two is still kind of up in the air, really. I mean, Bryce Butler, who they signed from Dallas, he could compete for that number two spot. You can have Christian Kirk be your number two. Yeah, it depends on how, you know, last year's draft, third round draft pick, the kid out of Grambling State, how he plays, he could be the option for number two. But I feel like they have a lot of threes and fours. They don't have that true number two receiver. And whether one kind of separates himself during training camp and OTAs, mini camp during the offseason, it's still yet to be seen. Or maybe they go after somebody, you know, some veteran who's either still a free agent or who gets cut at some point this offseason. But there's still a lot of question marks, which I think to me still kind of intriguing because you have the quarterback for now. You have Sam Bradford. As long as he stays healthy, I think you can have a pretty good offense. You think you'd want to surround him with some talent catching the ball. And I haven't been that impressed with what they did in the receiving core.
Yeah. I mean, an offensive line, how good do you feel about that group?
I think it's steady right now. I really do. You know, they drafted two guys to provide some depth. They obviously signed Justin Pugh and Andre Smith. Then you bring back, you know, you have DJ Humphrey still going to be your left tackle. Mikey Potty will be back, and he'll be in the left guard. AQ Shipley will be at center for now. I think you will see some competition there from the Cardinals' third-round pick, Mason Cole. And then, you know, on the right side, you have Justin Pugh at right guard and Andre Smith at right tackle. So I think with those two guys, it depends on how healthy they can be going into training camp, and especially during the regular season. But I think this team has a good group of 8 to 9 offensive linemen on paper. You know, obviously, I think there's some injury question marks. And then, you know, how else will some of the draft picks adapt to the NFL? But I think that this group is better than it was. But I think obviously you still have to see how they play on the field.
It was kind of interesting that I saw a couple of things where everybody's projecting and even Vegas is projecting. And I was stunned to see, which I don't believe, that they had the Cardinals, one predicting group, at like 5.5 games tied with the Browns for the worst team in football. I know this is a rebuilding type of year, but that just seems to be ridiculously low.
Well, I had them at 6-10. And,
oh, did you really? Okay.
Before the draft. Yeah, and they might have gained a game, maybe two, but at the same time, you know, this whole season hinges on whether Sam Bradford can stay healthy. And I think anyone who wants to bet on that is going to bet that he's not going to play all 16 games. And that means you're handing it over to either Mike Glennon, who I don't think is going to get many starts for this team if Sam Bradford goes down, or you're going to Josh Rosen. And no matter how talented of a young man he is, it's still going to be his first starts in the NFL, and there's still going to be a learning curve. I think it's going to be a rocky start for him. And so, the receiving core isn't very good right now. You know, going back to offensive line, we still have to see how healthy Pugh and Smith are. And I think there's some question marks at cornerback opposite of Patrick Peterson. They don't really have anybody who's tried and true over there. I think this defense could be pretty good again, but you're teaching these guys a whole new scheme after 5 years of running the same defense. So there's going to be a learning curve all around. I think there's still also a question mark with Steve Wilks. What kind of coach is he going to be? And I think what kind of in-game manager is he going to be? Because I think all told, there are some bright spots here. There are some good things going for this team. But I still think they're a 6-7 win team right now.
Interesting. If that's the case, how long would you think, just, I know it's only one day, that it would take for Rosen to be able to get in there and maybe get a chance to play?
I truly don't think he starts unless Sam Bradford gets hurt. So unless his team completely implodes and they're, 2-5, 2-6 at the break, then you might see some sort of change. But if this team's 3-4, even 3-3, 4-4, I still think they're going to stick with Bradford as long as they can, unless there's something that is just dramatically wrong with this offense. And then I'll think they'll go with Rosen. But I wouldn't expect that to happen anytime before the bye, which is midseason for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which makes a lot of sense. How's everybody taking it? Because, again, having had the great success with Bruce Arians, having been division winner, having been able to kind of have a good rivalry and a good chip in the shoulder, I mean, this is a big adjustment to go from a playoff contender to a possible 6-win team.
Yeah, but if you also have to look at the last 2 years, and it's kind of been on this slide, 7-8-1, then 8-8. So I think 6 wins wouldn't be too drastic of a change mentally for this team. I think that they understand there's a lot of rebuilding going on this year, and I think the franchise as a whole wouldn't be too surprised if that happens. But at the same time, I mean, everyone I've talked to has said that they are, it's a clean slate. They like the new coaching staff, but they also know there's going to be a learning curve, and that might be 6 wins, that might be 7 wins, that might be 10 wins if Sam Bradford stays healthy the whole season. So, I think this team, at least those are who have returned from the last couple of years, are somewhat prepared because this team hasn't been very good the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, no question. That makes it tough. And I would imagine that because one thing I do believe in, I believe in Steve Keim. I think he's a very good general manager, and I think that he'll get things right. But again, it may take a little bit of time.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think what's interesting is that he did get an extension after two seasons of 500 or worse. And I mean, to me, the question is how much longer are they going to give him? If they have 6-7 wins this year, how much longer is Michael Bidwell going to tolerate that after seeing the success that Bruce Arians brought to this organization and kind of what them going to the playoffs did for not just the team, but for the community? I mean, this whole state became a Cardinal state very quickly once they started to win. So I think, to me, it's going to be very interesting and intriguing to watch if this team doesn't start winning again soon. What kind of leash, if you will, Steve Keim will be on.
Now, of course, the veterans aren't practicing league-wide yet, but what adjustments do they have to make going from a 3-4 to a 4-3? And I guess clearly, you know, that puts Chandler Jones at defensive end as opposed to linebacker. But what other adjustments have to be made?
You're going to three inside linebacker, or you're going to three linebackers in general. So you're going to have a Mike, Will, and a Sam, which they haven't had in the last 5 years. So you're going to have possibly Dale Buchanan, Josh Bynes, and Hassan Reddick on the field all at the same time in linebacker roles, which I think could be very good for this, for the interior of this defense. You have Hassan Reddick.
Whoops. Hey, Josh, we're kind of breaking up. Tell you what, I think I better let you run because the cell phone's kind of breaking up. But, yeah, it's going to be a big conversion on the 4-3. And, Josh Weinfuss, thanks for joining us. And, of course, it's going to be interesting to see. Hope to see you here soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, John.
All right. Josh Weinfuss joining us. Of course, Arizona Cardinals. I mean, 6 wins. Kind of, again, I still think they might be a little bit better. I think this division is going to be good, but everything's going to be watching Josh Rosen to see if he has a chance to play this year. Clearly, it's going to be Sam Bradford at the beginning of the season. All right, let's load up the phone lines, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call, and let's get to Brad. Hey, Brad, how are you?
Hanging in there, thank you. Hey, I want to get your opinion on, or your explanation, I guess. Kaepernick, Reed, once like that, you know, they're out there saying that, you know, the NFL's tramping on their rights and stuff like that. And I don't get this, because I own a business, and I don't care what my guys believe and how they feel. But if they're on the job, if they're on the clock, and they decide to stand up and join a protest, they might as well just keep going and not come back. You know, these guys, they're on the clock with their teams. The teams aren't asking them to change their viewpoints, just not when they're on the clock with the teams.
And see, but this is where I think the league is at fault, because it's a real easy thing to solve. Don't put the players in that position. You know, before 2010, the players were in the locker room, not when the national anthem was on. I mean, this was something that was done because, you know, the league wanted to promote the military, but also they got money from the military to, you know, have sponsors and things of that nature. And so they were getting a little bit of some dollars out of it. And then now all of a sudden the players had to do it. Now you get into the stage where you have Colin Kaepernick and others that wanted to show their opinions and, you know, do it. And, you know, that's you know, if it's a free country, you can do it. But I still think the simple thing is just take the players out of the equation. That's the way it was before 2010. You know, in other words, Okay, and you as a boss, I can understand exactly what you're saying. If you're on the job and you're representing the company and you do something that's going to, you know, make the company not look good, well, then there could be sanctions for that. And you're the boss. You're the one that does that. The problem I see is that if you would also want to protect your employees. Don't have them in that position.
Yeah, I agree. I think just go back to when there wasn't a problem and, you know, solve it that way. Unfortunately, it's going to rear its head in some other direction. This type of, when people get going this strongly about things, they'll find another way to bring it out, as a general rule anyways.
Right. No, I agree. But I think this one is a real easy one to solve. Just go ahead.
Yeah, it would.
Take it out of the equation.
Hey, the Hawks didn't turn their back on Kaepernick. I mean, he didn't fit the slot at the time. And then now that they've got McDougal or whatever his name is, that guy's going to be a quarterback.
No, I tell you what, yeah. I mean, he looked good, and you can see he's already got a promotion. You know, they've now bumped him up, so he's technically the number three quarterback, and I think he's going to challenge Austin Davis. Now, again, I didn't think of that before because I didn't know who he was. And then you watch him in practice, and you go, wow, there is
Nobody
something
knew
there.
Who he was. You know, I don't know how he got through, but and he's – he reminds me a lot of Brady coming up.
He's more mobile than Brady.
We'll see. We might have a quarterback battle one of these years as it comes. So thanks again.
All right. Hey, Brad, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The training camps, of course, are getting closer. I know that the schedule's now out as far as the preseason games, so we know now that August 9th is going to be the first game for Seattle going against Indianapolis on a Thursday night. That gets things going, and, of course, then everybody will get a chance to see quarterback Alex, who looks pretty good, a quarterback that gives you some promise. So your thoughts on the Seahawks as they start to go through, they've got, the rookies now are done with their rookie minicamp, and now it's a matter of trying to see what looks good for the OTAs, because they're going to start on the 21st. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call here on this gorgeous-looking Saturday as we get ready. And, of course, just a reminder, the Mariners have a doubleheader today because the rainout last night in Detroit puts them in a position now they have to play two in one day, and that's at least better than that. But, boy, that really compresses things, because think about this on the pitching staff. You know, they have to go to Minnesota on Monday to get that snow out fixed up. And so now literally what they're doing is that they're playing four games in 3 days. And so if what they really do need is good starting pitching. The starting pitching's got to bail them out so the bullpen just doesn't get worn out, because that's going to be such a tough stretch. But hey, it's not that bad. Again, it's still baseball and all that. So thoughts on the Mariners, if you want to get into it. Are you surprised by the way this team has started? Are you pleased by the way this team has started? And also, what's your feeling on the draft and how the Seahawks were able to come out? Do you think they need to do more? Did they need to get another wide receiver? They had Brandon Marshall in this week, and Brandon doesn't look like they're going to sign him, but you can see bringing in Brandon Marshall shows that they are interested in trying to get a big wide receiver. You know, Brandon's 6'4", 229 pounds, and that kind of goes back to what Pete Carroll liked when he first started here as head coach, and what he definitely liked when he was at USC, you know, that Mike Williams-type receiver. He had 6'4", 6'5", 230-pound guy that can be physical. Yeah, he may not necessarily have speed, but he gives you that big presence and a big target that they can try to use. So I was kind of hoping that they would sign Brandon Marshall, because again, having him from my hometown nearby, he was East Liberty versus Braddock, PA, just a short drive away, would have been fun to kind of see him there. But at this stage, doesn't look like they're going to sign him. He was in, they didn't offer him a contract, or if they did, they didn't come to any kind of settlement. He headed back. So, and again, I can understand that. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Because when you look at the receiving core, what you see is that, there's room to try to bring somebody in. I know that when Bob Condotta did his 53-man roster, kept five wide receivers, and the fifth receiver was David Moore. You know, a good encouraging prospect, but not a proven guy. And so what you have right now is Amari Darbo as the third, and I think he can be settling into that role. I think that you can see that Jaron Brown has experience, and then you have David Moore, but it's still a young group. They're getting a little bit more size. Marcus Johnson's going to be interesting to watch, because he comes over as a speedster, somebody that can really get downfield real quickly. So he's going to be kind of interesting to kind of see where he is on the equation. But nevertheless, it's a group right now that they're going to probably throw the ball less. They're definitely going to run the ball more, because that's the plan. They want to try to get more running, and they want to try to be more aggressive with the running attack. I think that, you know, what you look at with Brian Schottenheimer, and it was kind of fun to watch him over last weekend, because, I mean, he's involved in everything. I mean, he is the master of the offense, and he rules. So it's like his rules dictate. And so because of that, you kind of had a kind of a murky situation that worked so well. I mean, you had Tom Cable as the offensive, you call him the running back coach, but he was also the assistant head coach. And then you had Daryl Bevel as the offensive coordinator. But when things start to slip, who really had the say in what to do? I mean, Tom can concentrate on getting the running game going. And, of course, Bevel was trying to get the passing game going, but it just didn't seem to work in the last year or two. And so, consequently, there was change. Cable's now down in Oakland. Daryl Bevel's still looking for a job. But give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The offense, I think, has a chance to be pretty good. And, again, I was so impressed with Rashad Penny. I mean, he really was able to catch the ball well, put on a pretty good show, particularly on Saturday and Sunday, just catching the ball, looking smooth, running. You can see he's going to be a physical presence. He seems to be a good decision maker with the way that he runs. I think a lot of good things there for Penny, and I think a lot of people now are starting to recognize, hey, he is better than maybe some of the ratings out there that had him as the fourth, fifth, sixth, and maybe seventh running back in this great running back class. I know Pro Football Focus thinks that he could come back and maybe get a 900-plus yard season, which would be huge for this team, because what they need is to start to get more of that running back mentality in, and try to try to win in the early downs, try to win in the early parts of the games, because that's something they weren't able to do, win those first downs in the early part of games, because too many three and outs, too many times they would go without getting any points or any touchdowns in the first quarter, and it put too much on the defense and put too much on Russell Wilson. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.